You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahi ahi mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toko ingoa.
Ko so whē toko ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora mea, how are you this week?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, I'm so glad to be back.
I know, I missed you last week.
I did have a last minute, I can't be here moment last week, but we're so back.
It's okay, I powered through.
We powered through, and I'm so excited about the show today. Mea, what have you got?
Yeah, I caught up with artist Sarah Hughes about her current exhibition at Gow Langsford, Onehunga Colour Memories. And Soph, what have you got?
I had a kōrero with artist Heidi Brickle about her current exhibition at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead, Wā Dividends.
He aha o whakara, we'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patahi mai, you can text us on 5395 5395 5 Wai mai rane, give us a call in the studio on 309-3879.
Also, after the show, kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou, te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō, hei pakihere roki roki maronga e te pai tuku tuku o Erilingi Poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Let's get into the show.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various Artists.
Sarah Hughes is a Tamaki-based artist known for her rich exploration and geometric abstraction through her dynamic installations and painting practice. Hughes continuously investigates colour and composition, tuning into their own inherent language to produce these dazzling paintings that hold this wonderful capacity for light, movement and memory. In her current exhibition, Colour Memories, at Gow Langsford's Onehunga location, Hughes presents a beautiful new body of paintings that continues in her exploration of memory, but more specifically to these ideas of artistic influence and lineage. Within Colour Memories, Hughes approaches these ideas of artistic lineage by directly responding to 11 female painters that have influenced her own artistic practice over the years, bringing both their paintings and Hughes' response paintings into the gallery space, creating a space of direct dialogue, response, and exchange between works and artists. I caught up with Sarah about the show and overall practice.
Hi, my name is Sarah Hughes. I'm an artist and I work in a range of different ways and different materials, but I definitely feel very connected to painting. That's what I studied at Elam for my undergraduate and my master's. But you'll often find my work also in public installations, public artworks around the city, like the Convention Centre building that's almost finished, or in places like Auckland Art Gallery or different public art galleries as well.
Wonderful. And your current exhibition, Colour Memories, on at Gow Langsford, displays a beautiful new body of paintings that explore these ideas of memory, influence, and artistic lineage. This project was developed over several years. I'd like to go back a bit to the beginning of this project and talk a bit about the emergence of this particular body of work. What kind of prompted you towards the exploration of those themes and, yeah, to dive into the specific project?
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, it's something that didn't just sort of pop up. It sort of developed over time, and I think in many ways the show is quite biographical, and perhaps there's a sort of an aspect of turning 50 and kind of reflecting back and thinking about things that are important to you in your life and people that have been important. And as an artist, you know, thinking back through that lineage and kind of wanting to recognise and, you know, give thanks, but also kind of understanding deeply the way that those people, some of them that you haven't even known or ever met, but have given you either, it's not always just visual influence, but courage, or given you ways of thinking, or given you ways of looking that has, you know, really been impactful on your practice.
And this exhibition does something so special, creating the space of cross-generational conversation between female painters, bringing the works from 11 female painters that have influenced your own artistic practice into the gallery space to sit in conversation with your own works. I read the accompanying essay by Dina Yezdik, and she says this wonderful line that says, to invite them into the studio is to expose the root system of artistic life, those unseen exchanges of influence, care, and inheritance that sustain creative growth. Would you like to speak a bit to the role or influence of these women within your own artistic practice? What have you inherited from their practices?
That's quite a wide question. And I think, like you mentioned, with Dina Yuzik's essay, I really loved that analogy to the forest floor, that it's something dense and alive and interconnected. And the way that, you know, there's like a network or there's a system of weaving. And so it's interesting to kind of use some of those words in relation to answering that question. Because there are 11 different artists, and the artists themselves are very different from one another. You know, I was a little concerned how, you know, their work would sit within the same space. If you think about someone like Frances Hodgkins or someone more contemporary like Katharina Grosse, a German artist. But I think to answer your question, I probably have to talk a little bit specifically about each artist. It's a little hard to speak generally. So perhaps the sort of starting point almost, or the impetus for the show, was a painting by Gretchen Albrecht that I actually was lucky to grow up with. I grew up in the far north in the Hokianga, in the end of a very rural valley, basically surrounded by the bush. My parents built a house. And I grew up with these two paintings, though. They had known Gretchen at university. And they are something I kind of come back to in terms of, you know, they gave me a lot to think about when I was young. I lived there until the age of 14, so very sort of formative years where I would spend time just free-ranging and then being in this environment with these two paintings. And so I've included one of the paintings in the exhibition, and I guess in some ways that's a starting point, and the work that I've created is called, in response, is called Weka Weka Valley, Thinking of GA. So in all of the titles of the work, there's also a sense of place, a sense of a particular time where I've thought or been quite influenced by that artist. And so I guess there's sort of like little clues within that. So if I then moved to another artist included in the exhibition, Jacqueline Fahey, with her painting Grandma and Emily from 1992. Jacqueline Fahey was one of my lecturers at Elam. And she was a fantastic, you know, amazing energy. At the time, I was lucky to have also Don Binney, Dick Frizzell and Bob Ellis, but she was the first woman lecturer that I had at Elam. And she really encouraged me to research and to present this lecture on woman artists that I'd always remember. And I think it was her way of giving me more understanding of what I was part of. And so I think there's, as an artist, you don't, you know, just work on your by yourself, and you know, you're part of this lineage. And so this exhibition is also quite a strong aspect of that. It's thinking about different, you know, different times of your life. You know, for example, my first time seeing a Bridget Riley when I was 18 in New York, I'd seen images in books and in slides at art history lectures, but I, you know, still remember really vividly the way that that painting really oscillated in front of my eyes, which was very different than in a, you know, magazine or in a print aspect.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, I mean, I could go through all the artists. I feel like, so in terms of, it's not sort of you know, all artists from a particular time, you know, in my life. But I guess that was how I selected the artists. The curation of the exhibition and including other artists wasn't something I'd done before. So that was quite new, and it took quite a lot of time to think about that and think about, you know, firstly, there could be a lot longer list to include. These are not the only artists to have influenced me or been important to my life or practice or thinking and making. But I guess it was a process where that sort of distilled, and it felt like just naturally there seemed to be people that were sort of important throughout different periods of my life. And I think that was the way that came together. You know, an artist like Louis Tenderson is someone I've always known, but it wasn't really until I saw the big retrospective of her work that Felicity Milburn and Lara Strongman and Julia Waite put together at Auckland Art Gallery, that also travelled to Christchurch, where I saw that sort of overview of her work, and kind of that really made me understand it more. And I saw the paintings that she did near the end of her life, which she called the month paintings, you know, January, February, March. And there was just something that was really affecting for me at that particular time in that particular exhibition.
Yeah, it's so beautiful how it's like these artistic influences aren't just there for, you know, colour and composition, but that they come into your life and, yeah, and it's really intertwined and woven into your own personal memories and your personal journey. And, yeah, you remember seeing them at specific times and it all kind of, yeah, builds together. And it's so lovely that they've been brought into the space.
Yeah, so I guess they all have, you know, They all have very personal stories. Just to touch on another one, it was very exciting and thrilling to actually see the works come into the gallery. Some of them are not in Auckland, so I travelled to Wellington to see Seraphine's pick, Easy Living, from 2015, which is at Victoria University, and then down to the Suter Gallery in Nelson to see the Mina Arndt work that's included, which is Mother and Child from 1919. It's fantastic that the lenders and the supporters and the different institutions and collectors were able to lend me this works to be able to have, because I didn't want to just sort of, it was really important to have the works in the exhibition. And also another quite big decision for me to make was the scale of the work, and I thought quite a lot about that, of my response work. You know, would it be smaller? Would it be bigger? And in the end, it was really important that it was exactly the same size. So it wasn't really a discussion about scale, but that it just sort of was in the space, I think. And that was, that was great for me to see that come together. You know, when you have an idea, you're always a little bit nervous sometimes until you see it realised or see it there on the wall. And so, you know, particularly, you know, when the Mina Arndt work came out, it hasn't left Nelson before. And so, you know, that's quite a major thing to see it here in Auckland. And there's a very strong connection with my grandmother who lived in Nelson. And growing up, me and my brother or family would always go to Nelson for summer holidays. But often when me and my brother went down, my grandmother would take us to the Suter Art Gallery, and we would look at the McCanns and the Wollastons and the Arndt collections, and do things like go and feed the ducks nearby at Victoria Park. And the title of my work, my response work to the Mina Arndt, is called Victoria Park, thinking of MA. And so I think with this particular body of work, there's also, like, you know, I guess you can generalise and maybe say I'm more of an abstract painter, but there's always a lot of reference and content within the abstraction. But perhaps in this exhibition, there's also glimpses of little glimpses of representational imagery sort of in behind these washes or transparent areas. And there's in terms of like the actual painting itself, there's a sort of interest in the kind of this holding of something that's sort of like very sort of spontaneous and intuitive painting, and very controlled painting with the sort of layers that come over the top that sort of allow you to see through but not quite, and hopefully sort of pull you in and out of the painting surface.
Yeah, and how does it feel having, like, for you yourself, seeing your works in such a direct dialogue? And because, yeah, seeing them all together, it must be quite overwhelming or quite, yeah, I don't know. Could you talk me through, yeah, what that feels like for you by seeing the show?
Yeah, when I came to, all the works leave the studio and then you arrive at the gallery and they were all sort of laid out, you know, not put up, because I had some ideas of where I wanted things, but you always end up changing things around when you see them in the space. But there was a sense of being, oh my gosh, there's the Agnes Martin, and oh my gosh, there's the Rosalie Gascoigne, and just having that sort of moment of like, I feel like I've done this deep dive and down into this particular work. Of course, it's more than just the work; it's the artist's career, it's the artist's writing, it's the artist's thinking. But somehow, there's also this deep dive into this particular painting and having a really slow look at that, which is not something you often get time to do as well. And so I think because of that, just sort of seeing the works was really overwhelming. Like I think the lovely technicians at Gallantford, you know, I almost had like a little teary moment when the Agnes Martins and my work were hung, because it was like, oh my gosh, it's sort of, I think that work, because it's 10 lithographs of hers and then 10 paintings of mine the same size, was perhaps the most tricky one. And I was like, oh, is this going to work? And then it just felt magic when it was up on the wall. It felt like, oh, that's kind of better than I imagined. It just feels particularly, all artwork is, all exhibitions are personal, but perhaps this feels a little bit more like bearing your soul and your stories and your thoughts even more in some way.
Yeah. Oh, how beautiful to have, to have the show. Could you tell me a bit more about this creative process of response? What did that process look like for you, that, responding to these particular artworks?
I think I was saying to someone recently, it felt like quite a different process in terms of how I normally approach a show. You know, often I'm an artist who tends to kind of collect a lot of information and research and read, and kind of I need all that behind me before I start making. And I definitely needed that with this show too. But you sort of often I collect all this information, then I start making and you kind of get a roll going. But it felt like it was almost like a mini exhibition for each artist. And that was, quite challenging in some ways, because I couldn't really work on different works at the same time. So when I was creating, for example, the Philippa Blair work, I couldn't be working on the Casa de Negros response work. I just felt like I really needed to really focus on that specific painting. But then, I was listening to different interviews or reading about the artist as well. So I felt like I almost really wanted to immerse myself in their artists I know well, but, I'm not always thinking about their work all the time. And so it was a great chance just to kind of step back and really feel surrounded. It's surrounded by that particular painting. I would go and visit the works that were in the exhibition and do things like, it wasn't about matching colour, but I really wanted to understand, colour's a big part of my practice, so I would take colour swatches just to kind of really understand things like the colour and the space. But then it was also thinking about, someone like Philippa Blair. She was one of my good friend's mum growing up, and, she was just Philippa Blair. thinking back and thinking about, now that I have children, she was a solo mum, she was bringing up children, she was teaching, she was, this top woman artist, young in the 1980s and vibrant, and, I took that for granted at the time. It was just, part of your life. And so I think there was, I was writing quite a bit as well, making notes. So it felt like there was, just this real immersion in terms of the response. I didn't want it to be as sort of black and white as this is the painting I'm responding to and this is my response. It felt like it needed to be really a lot deeper than that. And I think that that's why sort of, some of the things about, particular aspects of place came up. And also experiences over the last few years kind of also have found their way into particular works. Katharina Grosse, she's a German artist, but she was doing an art residency when I was doing my master's at Elam. It must have been about 2001. And a group of master's students helped her on a big billboard project that she did. And I just remember really clearly, she works... With the spray gun, not spray cans, but the spray gun, and just sort of, you know, because we were handing her the spray gun up and down the scaffolding, but just seeing the way that the spray was flying through the air and hitting the surface. And when I was in Taupo earlier in the year, my husband, an artist, Gregor Krieger, and he was installing a big sculpture called Boom Boom that we went with the boys to see Hooker Falls. And there was just that thing. Sometimes you see, or I see, I see the landscape, or I see things sort of through other artists. And I just saw all the sort of spray and the way it was catching the light. And it just gave me that sort of moment of, gosh, that really makes me think about back to helping with that billboard painting. And so that particular title of that work is called Hooker Falls, Thinking of KG. So I guess there's sort of many layers in terms of that, the way I approach the response. And not that everyone needs to know those or see those when they see the work, but that was a really important aspect and process for me.
Yeah, wonderful. This really conscious sitting with the artist and absorbing, yeah, not just the painting, but the things around them and the things that would have surrounded them.
Things that were surrounding me as well.
Yeah.
So it's not really it's a one-way conversation, but there's somehow a sort of a, somehow like a sort of a deep dialogue. going on.
Yeah, a dialogue that's not just within the paintings. And diving a bit more into your own kind of use of materiality and colour and composition, your paintings display this gorgeous understanding of colour and paint, tuning into their own inherent languages to produce these striking paintings. Do you want to speak a bit more to your layered use of colour within your works that evoke this wonderful display of light and movement within your paintings?
That's a nice way of putting it. Thank you. I think colour's always been really fascinating to me since I've been young. You know, I remember trying to catalogue leaves and the different greens and things and then being disappointed the next day when that all faded. Mm. But so I think there's a sort of a really strong inherent interest in colour. And, you know, I mean, colour sometimes gets a bit of a bad rap in art of being sort of decorative or feminine, but I think, you know, many artists don't. I mean, that's not a problem either.
Mm.
But I think, you know, I think colour's much more than that is what I'm trying to say. Like, I think there's, and it's extremely powerful, you know, there's an emotive response to colour. But there's also, like, you know, histories of ways colours were used and pigments and ways that colours were invented for artists' use in so many different ways. And I think through different projects and different exhibitions, I've investigated colour in lots of different ways. But just to talk about the colour in these works, I think what I'm really interested in now, as you mentioned, is the sort of the way that light and colour is about capturing that. And I guess that's something that artists have been trying to do for millennia. But I come to it, and I guess through my own way, but informed by all these other artists who have also investigated those sorts of things. But particularly, I'm interested in the sort of, like, at the moment, a lot of transparent layers and the ways that, you know, the underpainting will influence the top layers, and the way that there's a kind of, as a way, I think, to draw viewers into the artwork. I do a lot of public artworks, and the work I mentioned at the beginning, the New Zealand International Convention Centre, is all on glass, and that work's been going on for a very long time. But when I first started that, I was really intrigued with the way that working on glass, the way the natural light captured that and illuminated that. And so there was an aspect of interest that I wanted to then kind of reflect back into the paintings. I wasn't working on glass, but how could I, you know, create that sort of sense of movement and shift of light and luminosity, I guess. And so that's been quite a focus for a while now.
Beautiful. Yeah, it really shows within the work. It's, yeah, I love the beautiful layers that kind of, yeah, build up and I think speak really nicely to sitting with all of these other artists, seeing that kind of layered metaphor of all these kind of different women and different, yeah, things all coming together in that space.
That's a really nice way to put it. I like the layered metaphor.
That was Sarah Hughes speaking to me about Colour Memories, which is currently on at Gow Langsford's Onehunga location until the 29th of November. There is also an artist talk at the gallery this Saturday from 2 to 3pm. So head along to that to get some more info and see the work in person.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
We'll be right back. You're listening to Various Artists on 95BFM.
Where's your hat? No hat, no play.
I don't have one, sir.
Then go on and pick a hat from Lost Property.
Oh, sir, those hats all have nits.
It's nits or melanoma, Garth.
It's a no-hat, no-play summer, so it's lucky 95BFM have you sorted with sweet merch for your noggins. Choose from four designs, two classic cap designs, one cord design, and a bucket hat. Pre-order yours now from twotonesmerch.co.nz.
Go Cooler Music is giving away a guitar. Want to win it? Just text GOKULA to 5395, spelled G-O-K-U-L-A, along with your B-card number and your favourite guitar player or riff, and you'll be in the draw to win a Torquay Legacy guitar. Tune in to Dirtbag Radio Monday, December 1st, from 7 to 9pm to hear Rapley draw the winner. Cheers, GOKULA Music, 378 Broadway, Newmarket. 95.
The original originator. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Hey, you might want to sort that Muppet out.
What's wrong with my Muppet?
Well, Sarah's going to be here on Saturday.
Sarah's coming? You didn't tell me Sarah was coming. She can't see this dreary Muppet.
Yeah, those bass lines are drooping as well.
Ah!
Fluff your Muppets and slip slop slap up your bass lines. It's Saturday afternoons with Sarah.
Sarah.
Saturday afternoons with Sarah, 2 to 4 p.m. every Saturday, only on 95 BFM, thanks to Decibel Wines.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Heidi Brickle is an Otaki-based multidisciplinary artist. Her current solo exhibition at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead, Wah Dividends, takes pieces from its larger body, which was originally commissioned by director Sophie Davis at Te Whare Toi o Here Taonga, Hastings Art Gallery, for the exhibition Wah We Can't Afford. Having been developed in a six-week residency in Here Taonga as the gallery's inaugural visiting artist. Bringing this body of work into a new space and context and retitled as Wah Dividends, here Brickle places these fluent exploded paintings in conversation with Rimurapa, native bull kelp sculptural pieces, as gathered from the shores from Otaki and Te Rai Kaiho in one space, questioning the value of our time in relation to Mātauranga Māori, capitalism and our worsening climate crisis, opening up her practice to fluctuate between the spiritual, relational and existential. I caught up with Heidi Brickle about Wah Dividends, beginning our kōrero by asking her about the beginnings of this body of work and her experience of her artist residency in Here Taonga at the end of last year.
So I did a residency in Here Taonga, Te Takiwā o Kahumunu, to which I whakapapa, although my whakapapa is further into the Wairarapa than in the Hastings Here Taonga Rohe. But it was a 6 weeks residency there, and it was such a wonderful time, you know, like I was working full time when I did the residency. So the original title was Why We Can't Afford. And, you know, when I explain my full time work situation, I think that just explains it, you know, like, but it was a broader comment on the economic structure of the world that we live in which, you know, there's all these jobs where they're kind of pointless bullshit jobs, you know, like not that every aspect of them is, but there's this expectation of the 9-to-5 job. And I really believe, I just believe it's an entrenched colonizing structure, and it's one that particularly I feel of all of the colonizing structures. It's the one, you know, your time is all you really have in the world, and this idea that you show up at a job, no one's really interested in what you produce there a lot of the time. They're not interested in what you accomplish. Nothing is so important to them as the fact that you're not doing anything else right now, so that your face is present. Maybe I have this experience of jobs because I'm always trying to get more time for myself. I feel like I can do a lot of jobs really brilliantly, and I like to be able to do it on my own time terms. And that you get certain, you know, it's a kaupapa that came up over the lockdowns with flexible work arrangements, and it just, after that, there was this massive backlash, you know, and there just has become just this sort of crushing, controlling, you can't have free time. And I believe that is because your time, it's wā, you know, it's wā, which is its connection, and it's wānanga, it's turning over of ideas, it's creativity, it's time to think, it's time to question things, time to reflect. And I believe that our world is structured intentionally on some level so that people don't have that time. So that was sort of why I titled that exhibition, the wā that I experienced while I was in Here Taonga. I got to just spend time with a lot of other artists. In the middle of that residency, I did a little micro residency in Pairangi organised by Kau Chirim and Hirani Himona. And that was amazing. You know, I spent time with about eight other Māori artists, just
rather just sharing our practices. And so that's what I named that exhibition about. It has a lot of other references to experiences I've had within Kahu Ngunu Te Reo revitalisation contexts since about 2013. It has a lot of other references in there too, but yeah, that's a breakdown of that exhibition. And Wā Dividends, the way that I've derived it from that exhibition, when so Nicholas Butler from the Arts House Trust invited me to have a show there of that, and you know, it's a much smaller space. So I've taken one painting of four giant paintings I'd made for While We Can't Afford in Heretonga, and I've split up one of them. It was a 5-meter painting originally that I had an immense amount of fun painting, but I made it in parts, and I've split up those parts so that it can fit into Pa Homestead. And the idea there was, so dividends, I chose a word that directly points to money, you know, directly points to shareholders, but it comes from, I thought about calling it Wā Divided, which would come from the Māori Wā Mutu Mutu, Wā being related to Wai or Va. They, they're like our Pacific Ocean, connecting all of the mutu, which a mutu is an island, but a mutu means severed. So I guess I was playing on that contrast. And then, you know, you go through a journey thinking of these ideas. And I don't know, I just at that moment I wanted to point to, you know, the financial aspect of it. And to me, really, the dividends points to a whole economic structure in which there's these investors. You know, it's a world that's pretty opaque to us down here. There's all of these investors that control most of the companies that we are sort of increasingly globally colonised by. And so, yeah, so that's how I came from the Heretonga show to this one.
I want to kind of dive in a little bit more into the kind of switching of that context now at Arts House Trust. While We Can't Afford was quite context specific in its making, with your connection to that whenua and its surrounding pūrākau being quite present in the work, now in a different context at Pa Homestead, how do you kind of see the work exhibiting in a new location? Do you see it as quite translational, or has it given the work a different meaning for you in some way?
Good question. It definitely has given the work a different... I've taken the more universal aspects out of that While We Can't Afford in Kahu Ngunu. Yeah, I've taken the more universal aspects of it, which was the aspect of it which wasn't so much about the whakapapatū that rohe, and is more about looking out at the macro global systems that govern all of our worlds, no matter where we are.
I guess kind of echoing that question, you touched on it a bit before in your first answer. The way in which the works in this show have been installed does differ from the show in Heretonga earlier this year. And instead of the paintings being in this single installation, I guess, pouring down a single wall and creating this kind of awa river or vine, the works are now divided into four and spread across the space in the gallery. Talk to me a little bit, I guess, about how you kind of see the works in this new mode of presentation. How do you kind of see this translating in the new space?
Well, the original works in pouring down the incredible architecture of John Scott in the Heretonga space, they referenced Kō Whaiwhai in that they come from, they heke rangi, they descend from Ranginui down to Papatū Anuku, and they're talking about whakapapa as well. But here, dividends deriving from divided from mutu, they are whakamutu'd. They've been separated out. And I had a lot of fun installing it with... So I'm just going to say that Nicholas Butler, who asked me to have to refigure this exhibition, has also written a beautiful text about this, which is online. But with Nicholas and Michael Prezer, their technician, I had a lot of fun. I came in for a day and we set up how we were going to refigure a lot of arrow-shaped kind of, what would you call it? They were clusters which hung in Heretonga, and they derived from the Mangō Pari, but I used them directionally there as up and down, talking about economic trajectories. But here we've put them more as, I found times when I've often done ocean maps where you're researching your waka and the journeys they took from here to here. You draw all these arrows of where they've gone, and I'm like, essentially you're just drawing Mangō Pari, this form, and it's just a directional form, you know. So we've refigured them, and the way that we've hung them is, I wanted them to register as islands and directions, similar to those kind of whakapapa drawings that I've that I've made in the past.
I wanted to speak a little bit more specifically to the works in the show. Of course, you've got these, I guess, two types of work, these beautiful exploding painting works on mounted canvas, which connect to these Puraako rivers and tributaries, and two, the inclusion of these rimurapa, native bull kelp sculptural pieces scattered and hung throughout the space alongside the paintings. Within these works, and particularly in conversation with each other, there seems to be a strong focus on our present climate crisis and interconnecting Mātauranga Māori with these concepts. And I guess I'm particularly thinking about the symbol of the koru feeling quite present in the exhibition as well. You've spoken about the kind of subject matter in terms of the job environment and that feeling like a colonized concept. What about the subject matter in terms of the climate that you're kind of referencing here felt important to you to be making work in response to it at this moment in time?
Well, the climate issue, I mean, it's something that I think everybody, at least everybody in my own bubble, knows. You know, that the climate is caused, the climate changes that we're experiencing are caused by, you know, big business. That has led us to the point of, you know, for people in Pacific nations of apocalypse right now, or, you know, led us to this point. The sort of how I got to it, it wasn't a particular focus of my work, but through working with that rimurapa, which I started in about 2020, it led me to that because I'd collected just stuff that's washed up on the beach, but somebody at some point asked me, oh, are you worried about being able to collect that material in the future? Because they explained to me that it is endangered by the ocean warming that is happening. They said, oh, that, you know, that's killing the kelp forests all over the world, and also those kelp forests. So then I sort of became interested in that because, well, it's my material. So, you know, I then realised that those kelp forests also provide a lot of the shade that keeps the ocean cool. So it isn't the cyclical, there's a cyclic thing where it being destroyed is, you know, it's destroying the thing that saves us, similarly to the trees on land, I guess. So it's just the climate, the climate reference is really just something that has come up that just inheres in a material that I use. And it's obviously something that affects us all. I guess I don't, there's many facets to my practice and I haven't felt I need to, I don't know, have anything more to it than the obvious acknowledgement of the fact that climate change is imminent and, you know, everybody knows, not sure what we can do about it as individuals.
Yeah, for sure. It's so present on all of our minds, and yeah, for that to just kind of come through the making of the work is really interesting to hear about. I'd love to know a little bit more about your process in making these painting works as well, and I guess I'm particularly interested in the shaping of the canvas with them as well. Are you able to walk me through your process in making those works?
Yeah, for sure. So it was quite complex, actually. So the I'll just say the string that I use on these canvases is a beeswax twine, and I've moved to that from an original process which I used to have of when I would tear canvases up, the strings would fall away, they'd fray away, and I would sort of salvage them and reuse them as a way to create continuous line drawings, which to me is a reflection on whakapapa and kind of the ontology that is in our old art forms, which, you know, you sort of can understand in theory, but there's so much mystery still in a lot of the artwork because it is a visual language. There's so much you can say about it, and you can, you know, you can talk about how we are connected, you know, in a thread of whakapapa and everything. But I think from our perspective, born in the time we are, it's also hard to access that sense in a certain way. It's hard to step out of yourself, outside of yourself as an individual. So for me, it's just a way to imagine that, and working with a continuous thread, it's a way to try to access a deep understanding of, I believe our ancestors saw us as more interconnected than what we perceive ourselves to be now. So that's where that comes from. Making back to these paintings, so I take that out, and now I've turned to using the twine just because it's bigger, it looks better. You see it better when I'm working at a larger scale. But I will sort of hand dye it. I'll put it in jars of acrylic paint, agitate it for a few days, string it all over my lawn like a crazy string lady, as my friends say. And then dry it out. Yeah, that's to dry it out and then scrape it, sort of akin to harakeke preparation, and then spool it back up. And then I sort of create different devices to wind it around the sculptural elements of these practices. So sometimes I'll turn a drill upside down and put the wire along it, and, you know, you sort of create through supermarket, you know, the little shopping basket. So I'll sort of create a spool out of that. There's been quite a few different iterations, like little low DIY technology kind of ways to get a thing turning and all of the strings coming without them interrupting each other. So that's part of the process. And then to make that string and some of the sculptural work too. But with the paintings, these were the biggest paintings I'd made in a very, very long time. And it was so amazing. I had a big space to make them, and I had a big barn that I was working in. And so I bought some decking and I just screwed it together. I cut it, 3 meters was the highest that I realized I could stand it, with the lowest risk of it falling on me when I tried to prop it up my own or lie it back down again. So I screwed the decking together. I went out onto my lawn. I stretched the canvas over it as tightly as I could at that scale. And I projected the drawings that I'd made. I projected them onto it at night, because at that scale, it's good. It helps me with the amount of symmetry that I work with, and then the string. Creating it with the string, there's just not, you know, you can't do it in a sketchy way, because every time you adjust something it pulls out. So I'll chalk it up from a projector, which has varying degrees of accuracy. It has enough not accuracy that I feel you still get an organic drawn quality to the paintings. But anyway, so I project that up and then I lie it down and stand it up on a daily basis. I use a lot of staining with acrylic paint, and I did this before putting it onto masonite, the hardboard that I've backed it with, because painting directly onto a wooden surface, you don't get the bleed effect, the staining effect that I use a lot in my painting. So I needed to make the work on a canvas before cutting it out into the shapes that it was going to be. Jonathan, who works at Hastings Art Gallery, I love getting texts and help me make a bit of my work. he cut out the shape, so I painted the canvas, covered up after it was ready, sent it to him, and he cut the shapes out of hardboard for it, and then I glued it on with rabbit skin glue, and then laid down the twine as a part of while I was in the installation process.
For those who do come to see the show, do you have any particular hopes for viewers engaging with your works, or do you leave it quite open to interpretation?
Well, to be honest, there's a lot of different ideas that I weave into my work. And I mean, you've got all these ideas floating around in your head, but to me, the reason you make artwork is never any way that you're going to articulate your artwork. You're doing something different with your hands. And to be honest, I kind of have wanted to talk about this show in the broader context of my practice. I've been having a bit of a crisis with, to what extent do you want to explore the kind of more spiritual, psychological, existential aspects of the world, of your relation to the universe in your practice, and to what extent do you want to address the political? And to me, this has been a bit of a crisis, because I think certainly my work started getting attention maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. And shortly after, I started to really feel a strong sense of intuition about what I was doing, a strong sense of pursuit of what I wanted to do with my work. That sort of came out of a sense of, that was in a time where there was, you know, I was heavily involved with Te Reo Māori revitalization through my work in Kura Kaupapa, and that came out of a real sense of abundance, and Te Ao Māori was flourishing, and I don't know, it was like reaping rewards that had been fought for generations. And my work, it was about abundance and I wanted to make Māori artwork that was, you know, there's a big market for trauma-driven work or Māori work that's about trauma, and that's really important work. But, you know, I was aware as a kaiako that that's not the only thing you want to feed your tamariki, you know. Like, you want to give examples of, like, I was like, you know, there's so much Māori flourishing and that's what you want to show tamariki, you know. And so that's kind of what has driven my work for a long time. But I think, you know, with the sort of the right-wing turns in the world and the economic crackdowns and our government, the most corrupt and racist government we have had in my lifetime, it's put me into a bit of a, like, you know, wanting to, I don't know, the question of whether do you continue with creating work that is flourishing, or like, in some ways it can feel like putting your head in the sand to do that when there's just such a strong attack. But I haven't answered that question yet for myself. So I think my work is fluctuating a little bit between wanting to address the broader global macro systems that are impacting on us as individuals. And then there's also, you know, there's also the fact that I'm a person with a life that isn't always easy, and a lot of why I've made my work is to explore the more personal, you know, the more personal kind of relational aspects of myself as an individual, and in a way that I hope, you know, I think the emotional register is something that's kind of universal, you know, other people can relate to. I guess I want people to be aware of a tension between using a creative practice as a way to create joy and abundance and sovereignty, but at the same time, I don't know how much of it is a fight, or how much of it are you using to, I don't know, just mihi ki te kino, you know, like acknowledge struggle without my giving any, I don't know. That's a struggle that is in my practice at the moment. So yeah, that's a question that's in there that I'm not answering. I'm just yeah, it's just in there.
That was artist Heidi Brickle speaking to me about Wah Dividends, her solo exhibition currently on at the Arts House Trust at Par Homestead.
Oh, that's a good art.
We'll be right back with your arts guide. This is PJ Harvey with The Wind. You're on 95BFM.
Catherine liked high places. Where she could wash.
It's the 95BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings and that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Colour Memories by Sarah Hughes is on at Gow Lanxford Onehunga until the 29th of November.
As also mentioned on the show, Heidi Brickle's Wild Dividends is on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead until the 1st of March 2026.
Retreat, an exhibition by Georgia Arnold, is currently on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 29th of November.
Jimmy Maia'i All-Star 1.0 is currently on at Grace Aotearoa until the 29th of November.
Chemistry, an exhibition by Emma McIntyre and Timothy Webby, is on at Coastal Signs until the 29th of November.
Parts of a Cell, an exhibition with Jim Allen, Campbell Peterson and Kali Solaite Uhila, is on at Michael Lett until the 6th of December.
Gus Fisher Gallery's group exhibition, What We Choose to Remember, is on until the 13th of December.
Echo, an exhibition by Tarika Sabol, Erica Holm and Naroma Riley, is on at Artspace Aotearoa until the 20th of December.
Julia Holderness's Room at Ashenby is on at Sanderson Contemporary until the 7th of December.
And Room currently has two exhibitions on view, Stack Rat by Finn Chadwick, Marilyn Jones and Bronte Heron, and Prelude by Tess Walker Elliott. Both are on until the 29th of November. If you have something you want on the Art Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's for all for us on various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Heidi Brickle.
And Sarah Hughes.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram, 95bfm various artists, for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa te rā wiki. Next up is the land of the Good Groove with Murray. My name is Sophia.
And I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Keep it on the B.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.